You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 31st, 2023. I'm Grace Miller from Drake University. Here is our first story. The article opens up with Happy Halloween, a spooky good time, and it shows photos such as two children sitting in front of the public library in costumes going through their candy bags. One little girl is wearing a crocodile outfit that has green spots all over it and some pink boots. And the little boy is wearing what seems to be a blue and black ninja outfit. And they're both going through their candy bags. Our first story is Reynolds Defends Library Book Restriction Law by Caleb McCullen and Tom Barton. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds defended a state law that requires schools to pull books with descriptions of sex acts from library shelves during a press conference on Wednesday, as the state's Department of Education said it may provide more guidance to schools navigating the restrictions. The law, passed by Iowa's legislative Republicans and signed into law by Reynolds this year, requires that school libraries only include age-appropriate materials and specifically bans any books that describes or depicts any of a list of defined sex acts. The law also requires schools to notify parents if a student requests to be called by a different name or set of gender pronouns, and bans teaching about gender identity or sexual orientation in kindergarten through sixth grade. Schools must also provide a policy to request removal of any classroom materials and request parental permission before a student takes a survey or exam to access the student's mental, emotional, or physical health that is not required by state or federal law. Reynolds read the list of sex acts written in law that would warrant a removal from libraries and said the standard should be clear on what is and is not allowed in schools. Quote, "I'm not sure what any kindergartner or anybody in school should be subjected to that, and what value that brings to them," quote, end quote. Reynolds said, quote, "So that's the definition. It is very, very clear," end quote. According to a database maintained by the Des Moines Register, districts in Iowa have removed at least 450 books from their shelves in response to the law. According to the Register's database, the Riverside Community School District has removed All Boys Aren't Blue. It's a memoir about growing up black and queer that includes sexual content, including depictions of sexual assault. In the Omaha metro area, the Papillion La Vista Community Schools recently opted to keep All Boys Aren't Blue on its high school shelves. However, Nebraska doesn't have a similar law to Iowa. Other nearby Southwest Iowa districts aren't listed in the Register's database. Many districts have removed commonly challenged books like Gender Queer and The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. Books that are often assigned high school reading, like George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, has also been pulled by several districts. Education and library advocates have argued that an overly broad interpretation of the law by school districts trying to avoid legal repercussions will lead to schools pulling materials off library shelves that should not be removed under the law, depriving students of their opportunity to read books they otherwise would. Speaking about the removal of commonly assigned books, Reynolds suggested school districts are implementing broad restrictions because they don't like the law, and she said the books that fall under the definition of a sex act in law should be clear. Quote, "I think it's pretty clear, and if they can't distinguish that, then I don't know. Maybe we ought to look at what they should be dealing with," end quote, Reynolds said. Quote, "It's just a distraction, and they don't like it, so they're blowing it out of proportion," end quote. Reynolds tied the effort to remove books with sexual content from schools to the need to boost scores in reading, math, and other areas that have lagged because of learning loss from the pandemic. Quote, "Our kids and our teachers deserve better," end quote, she said. "They deserve the tools to help these kids succeed, not a damn distraction on a nasty pornographic book that should never ever be in a classroom," end quote. State Board of Education may provide guidance. The Iowa State Board of Education has until December 28th to begin promulgating rules to implement several provisions of the law. However, it remains unclear whether state officials will issue new rules or guidance related to removing school library materials and instruction related to sexual orientation or gender identity that's now barred in kindergarten through sixth grade. Heather Doe, communications director for the Iowa Department of Education, did not specify which provisions of the law for which the State Board of Education will promulgate rules. A specific date for the board to consider proposed rules has not been set yet. Doe said the standard rulemaking process takes at least 108 days, but no more than 180 days, she added. Penalties for violating the law take effect on January 1, 2024. State officials will give first-time offenders a written warning. Subsequent violations could lead to superintendents and employees being called before the Iowa Board of Education examiners for a hearing and possible disciplinary action, according to the law. Iowa Department of Education officials this summer left vague their plans to give school administration more guidance on what constitutes age-appropriate material and which books would or would not fall under that definition, including materials referencing any type of gender identity and sexual orientation. The board's president during a meeting this summer noted school officials and administrators across the state have clamored for guidance from the department in implementing the law, in part to avoid the possibility of litigation over book removals. Melissa Peterson, legislative and policy director with the Iowa State Education Association, the state's largest teachers union, said by her reading of the law, it does not compel rulemaking by the state board related to school library materials, but does for other less controversial provisions. Left to seek their own legal guidance, some schools initially removed hundreds of books, while others have waited, hoping for direction from the state before the law's penalties go into effect January 1st. Peterson pointed to the Urbandale Community School District, which paused its initial removal of nearly 400 books from shelves that may violate the law, narrowing down the list to 64 titles after more careful review. The Iowa City Community School District this month released a list of about 70 book titles removed from schools to comply with the new law. This list includes Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, which tells the story of a young black girl after the Great Depression, and Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, a futuristic dystopian novel set in a patriarchal, white supremacist, totalitarian state which has overthrown the U.S. It also includes A Thousand Acres, a novel written by Jane Smiley, a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop at the University of Iowa. Peterson said ISEEA constitutes to be disappointed that the Iowa Department of Education has not issued better guidance to schools on how to navigate the thornier provisions of the law. Peterson said she's cautiously optimistic the State Board of Education will compel the department to issue guidance at its next meeting, November 15th. Quote, "We have a lot of important work ahead of us in public education, and when you take into consideration staff shortages and the needs of students, unnecessary distractions are not appreciated at this point," Peterson said. "And we think this issue has been a significant distraction that could easily be removed with clear guidance from the Department of Education. We shouldn't be making it harder for folks to do their job and be in compliance." Our next story, Byrd highlights office's election security rule by Lee Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd reminded Iowans that under a new state law, her office will prosecute election fraud and misconduct cases. Byrd highlighted a portion of Governor Ken Reynolds' state government reorganization plan that was approved by the Republican majority legislature and signed into law by Reynolds this year. One section of the wide-ranging law gave the Attorney General's office authority to prosecute election crimes. Quote, "It's critical that we maintain Iowans' trust in our elections system," Byrd said in a news release. "No Iowan should have to worry about whether their vote will count, I am committed to ensuring the safety and security of our elections so that every Iowan's voice is heard, end quote. Byrd, also a Republican, recently endorsed former President Donald Trump in the GOP presidential primary. Trump, over the past 3 years, has made false claims of fraud in the 2020 presidential election that he lost to President Joe Biden. Those 2020 results have been confirmed by state election leaders from both major political parties, and all legal challenges to the results were defeated or dismissed. Trump has been indicted on charges of attempting to have the presidential election results in Georgia overturned. Multiple Trump associates have already pleaded guilty to similar charges in that case. Byrd said state law prohibits any action that interferes with an Iowan's right to vote or allows for a casting of an illegal vote, and listed as examples registration and voter fraud, bribery, voter intimidation, and voting equipment tampering. Byrd encouraged any Iowan concerned about potential election misconduct to report it to their local law enforcement agency. She said any questions regarding election procedures should go to the county auditor or the Iowa Secretary of State's office, which oversees elections in the state. The state is undergoing its first election since the new state law went on the books July 1st. Early voting has already started in municipal elections for city and school positions. Election day is November 7th. There is also a photo provided, taken by Jesse Brothers, the Sioux City Journal, of Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd as she's waving during the third annual Feenstra Family Picnic on May 13th. Next story. Candidates Talk Housing at New Visions Forum by Dave Gulbitz. Housing and homelessness took center stage Sunday at a forum for Council Bluffs City Council candidates hosted by New Visions Homeless Services. Five of the six city council candidates, Christopher Carey, incumbent, Joe DiSalvo, Kimberly Kulikowski, Pat Miller, and Jill Schudick, attended. Incumbent Roger Sando did not participate. The candidates took questions from New Visions president and CEO Brandy Waller and the audience pertaining on their qualifications to be a member of the council and how they would be addressing the city's lack of affordable housing. I know right now that it is a crucial time in our community, as in a lot of different communities, Waller said, noting that people are experiencing a rise in homelessness amid a decline in affordable housing. Those are two things that continue to be hot-button items at forums across the whole entire United States, because everybody needs a home. If we're going to thrive as a community, everybody needs a home, end quote. Waller asked the candidates what their plans are to address the lack of affordable housing in Council Bluffs. Quote, one of the things we've been attempting to do over the last few years is to increase the gross housing stock in general, quote, end quote, DiSalvo said. Quote, some reports have come out that when the available amount of rentals or open housing is below 5%, your amount of homelessness goes up exponentially because of the simple economics of it, its supply and demand, end quote. Currently, the rental vacancy rate in Council Bluffs is closer to 2%, Waller. Waller said, quote, we were at a housing conference at Cedar Rapids, and they brought it up. They said, you're in trouble if your vacancy rental rate is under 8% to 5%. Really in trouble, end quote, Waller said. All the candidates were in agreement that building more housing for all income levels is essential to the city's growth. They discussed how to make that happen. Miller, former director of the Council Bluffs Public Works Operations Department, would prioritize incentives for developers, though he admitted that it's just a really tough time right now. Quote, with all the interest rates and things that are happening, developers are sitting back. We're going to have a long battle ahead of us, end quote, Miller said. Kulikowski, executive director of Family Inc., will look at current zoning ordinances and try to leverage the council's influence over developers. Quote, perhaps we can influence over saying if you want to create a, a housing project as a developer that we may perhaps mandate that some of it needs to be affordable or that it's located in a certain area, she said. I think that we can have some influence over those things, end quote. Shudik, who is nearing the end of a four-year term on Council Bluffs Board of Education, would like to focus more on redeveloping neighborhoods that already exist. Quote, we've knocked about 2,500 doors, and walking through the streets of Council Bluffs, and even just driving there today, I drove by six houses that were boarded up, vacant, and just sitting there and falling apart, Shudik said. We need to be concentrating on what we have here, redeveloping those different neighborhoods that are already established, end quote. Shudik also believes that the city needs more multifamily housing, like townhomes and apartment complexes, if the population is ever going to increase. Quote, it's going to take a lot of different ideas, different tasks, going on at once to solve our housing crisis, she said. Carrie agreed, calling for more diverse housing options in Council Bluffs. Quote, we can also achieve this by doing zoning reforms as well as doing procedural changes that make housing development simpler, shorter, and more transparent, end quote, he said. Waller also asked the candidates how they would change people's perception of Council Bluffs and make them want to live here. As the only candidate who has moved to Council Bluffs from Nebraska, Kulikowski said that she would like to see the city do better job marketing itself. Quote, we need to sign the praises of our community better, she said. We are a bit humble as a community, and we don't always shout from the mountaintops how great Council Bluffs is and of all the amazing things that we have to offer here, end quote. Shudik echoed Kulikowski's statement, pointing to the different events that the city holds that bring people in from surrounding towns. Quote, we need to promote ourselves, Shudik said. I think that we have some great events like our parades, our Latino Fest. We have the upcoming Winter Fest that brings people over from not only across the river, but from surrounding areas as well. From Underwood, Trainer, Tri-Center, things of that nature to get people in and see what we actually have, end quote. Miller would like to see Council Bluff's most traveled streets, like West Broadway, spruced up a little bit more to make it a little more attractive to traverse. Quote, what people and families want today, if you look around at other cities when you come in, they want to see shops, they want to see businesses, and they want to see parks, Miller said. They want to see things that families are going to do, really. In Council Bluffs, you have to drive through a little bit further to find it, end quote. DeSalvo would like to continue improving the city's infrastructure, the streets, sewers, water systems, acknowledging that without those bare necessities, you can't get a developer to build houses, let alone people to live in them. Quote, people need to be able to come to a community and move into it that has a functioning infrastructure, he said. That's been an ongoing process for the last few years. We're working on some processes that have started. It's a 20-year process, and there's 10 years left to go, end quote. Election day is November 7th. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Early voting is underway. For more election information, visit elections.pottcounty-ia.gov. Our next article, Meet the Candidates, Council Bluffs City Council. The nonpareil received responses to our questionnaire to each candidate. Their responses have been edited for length and clarity, but they have not been independently vetted. First candidate, Christopher Carey, age 37, occupation, food and beverage industry. First question, why are you running for office? Answer, I am running for office because I've lived in Council Bluffs most of my life. As a homeowner and parent, I want to keep the city a great place to raise a family. I will work hard and make sure your voice is heard. Second question, what change do you want to see? Answer, making the city safer, building strong positive relationships within the community, and more infrastructure projects. Third question, what experience do you bring? Answer, I have experience in customer service, problem-solving skills, as well as leadership experience. Fourth question, how do you describe your politics? Answer, very aggressive when getting issues resolved. making those decisions that are best for the community as well as city. Last question. Why should voters select you? Answer. If selected to represent the community, I'm committed to maintaining a balanced budget, building positive police-community relationships, support economic and infrastructure projects, as well as amplify the voice of the community. Next candidate, Joe DeSalvo, age 38, occupation, Smith Davis Insurance. First question, why are you running for office? Answer, to continue working for the betterment of our community. I have always been an active member of my community. I'm running for not just my own children, but everyone else's as well. Second question, what change do you want to see? Answer, I want to see Council Bluffs grow both up and out. Third question, what experience do you bring? I have served on the council for the last 4 years. I currently serve on the Advance Southwest Iowa Board. I greatly enjoy both positions. I was a triple major in college. Being a student athlete, I've been on teams my whole life. Throughout the years, I have worked in the IT, banking, finance, insurance, sales, and service industries. As an entrepreneur, I understand the plight of the small business owner. I also know well the struggles of the working man, as I have worked more than one job my entire adult life. Fourth question. How do you describe your politics? Answer. My politics are what is best for the residents of Council Bluffs. Final question. Why should voters select you? Answer. We have done our best to move Council Bluffs in the right direction and would ask for another 4 years to continue doing the same. Next candidate. Kimberly Kolakowski, age 45, occupation, executive director at Family Inc. First question. Why are you running for office? Answer. I am running for office because I truly love my community and am driven to do all I can to contribute to a positive experience for everyone in Council Bluffs. As a leader, I know the best ideas and solutions come about when you have a diverse experience and perspectives at the table. I am motivated to bring my unique perspective to City Council and be the voice for those who do not currently feel represented or heard in our community. When we lift others up, the whole community benefits. Second question. What changes do you want to see? Answer. Council Bluffs is an incredible community with a lot of strengths to build on. I want to see our community working together to address the challenges we face and find solutions that offer dignity and respect to all residents, regardless of income or status. An area of need in our community in order to grow and thrive in the future is housing, both affordable and market rate. Third question. What experience do you bring? Answer. I have been serving children and families in our community for 20 years and bring a keen understanding of the areas of need in our city. I am skilled at developing and fostering trusting positive relationships with individuals facing poverty to top leaders in our city, and can be a bridge to ensure voices are heard and the best solutions are found. As a nonprofit executive, I know how to manage a budget, lead a team, and develop innovative approaches to challenges. I am a Rotarian CB ambassador, master gardener, leadership CB alum, Lincoln Fairview Neighborhood Association board member, and coming soon, your city councilwoman. Fourth question. How do you describe your politics? Answer. I genuinely believe the good in people and that everyone deserves to be respected and heard. I focus on solutions rather than who to blame for the problem and know that the best ideas come about when you have a different perspectives at the table. I have learned that when we take care of those who need it, it doesn't mean I have anything less and in fact, everyone ends up being better off in the long run. Final question. Why should voters select you? Answer. I will work hard for all 62,405 Council Bluff residents and bring a fresh new perspective to the table. The leader of our city government should reflect the residents who live here. I will be the voice for the individuals I have served over the past 20 years, as well as the leaders I've served alongside. I will listen and lead with honesty and transparency. My passion and heart belong to Council Bluffs. Next candidate, Pat Miller, age 68, occupation, retired director of operations. Question, why are you running for office? Answer, I plan on living in this city the rest of my life. As a resident of Council Bluffs, a military veteran, and a dedicated community advocate, I'm excited to offer my experiences and passion for public service to Council Bluffs City Council. Second question, what change do you want to see? Answer, I have always been a strong advocate of accountability. I will hold our government accountable to assure we make good financial decisions in budgets, expenditures, and staff. I want to see growth in our city and to be the place where families want to live, with good schools and strong public safety. Third question, what experience do you bring? Answer, with over 40 years in infrastructure and asset management, as well as 20 years creating, maintaining, and balancing budgets, I can bring a unique, practical perspective to the City Council. I have experience working with Council Bluffs City Resources through my involvement in public works, such as my current position on the Council Bluffs Water Board. Third question, how do you describe your politics? Answer, I will provide an open door for residents to discuss ideas and concerns. This will help me resolve issues and find answers to questions our residents might have. Most importantly, I will strongly encourage accountability within our city government to help ensure that we meet our goals and deadlines. Last question. Why should voters select you? Answer. I have the experience our community needs. I am a United States Army veteran, and my military experience instilled in me the value of leadership and commitment to duty. I will bring this same dedication, drive, and resilience to serving our community. I don't think anyone else offers the big picture vision of what our community can be in the way I can. And I believe I've delivered the results to prove that I can get the job done as a director and as a leader. It's about you. Let me help us be a strong community by working together. I feel I can do that as your city council person. Next candidate, Roger Sando, age 37, occupation, owner Sando Bros, sign company and corporation. First question, why are you running for office? Answer, I am running for office because I am deeply committed to serving the residents of Council Bluffs. I believe in the power of public service and the positive impact that governments can have on people's lives. I want to continue working towards the betterment of our community and ensure that Council Bluffs remains a great place to live, work, and raise a family. Second question, what change do you want to see? Answer, the change I want to see is a Council Bluffs that is thriving. I envision a city where opportunities for growth and prosperity are accessible to all residents, where our neighborhoods are safe and well-maintained, and our residents are truly happy to live here. I want to continue building a community that values small business, large business, innovation, and sustainability. Third question, what experience do you bring? Answer, throughout my previous terms on the City Council, I have gained valuable experience in local governance and community leadership. I have actively engaged with residents, listened to their concerns, and advocated for their needs. Through my involvement in various groups and initiatives, I have developed a deep understanding of the complex challenges facing our city and have successfully collaborated with fellow council members to find effective solutions. I do believe I have been a strong voice for the citizens. Fourth question, how do you describe your politics? Answer, I describe my politics as pragmatic and people-centered. I believe that politics should be a means to improve the lives of individuals and communities rather than a platform for personal gain or ideological battles. I prioritize evidence-based decision-making and collaboration in order to find common ground solutions that benefit the greatest number of people. My focus is on practical solutions that deliver tangible results for the residents of Council Bluffs. Last question. Why should voters select you? Answer. Voters should select me because I have a proven track record of delivering results for Council Bluffs. Throughout my previous terms, I've worked tirelessly to address the concerns of our residents, improve our infrastructure, enhance public safety, and promote economic growth. I have always been accessible to the community, listening to their needs, and advocating on their behalf. With my experience, dedication, and passion for serving this community, I am confident that I am the right choice to continue leading Council Bluffs towards a brighter future. Final candidate, Jill Schudick, age 44. Occupation, client service management for a large financial technical company. First question, why are you running for office? Answer, Council Bluffs is a great place to live, learn, and work, and I want to help represent the people and community to the best of my ability. I am coming to the end of my 4-year term as a Council Bluffs Board of Education member and want to continue to serve my community. Second question, what change do you want to see? Answer, while serving on the Board of Education, I had an open door / open email policy and welcomed community members and stakeholders to provide feedback and or concerns. I would like to see more community engagement by hosting a monthly coffee and convos once a month to listen to citizens' concerns and have an opportunity to discuss any issues. I would also like to see 2 new policies for council members, updating the municipal code to include an attendance policy and requiring all members to become certified council members. Third question, what experience do you bring? Answer, I have taken pride in the fact that I study and educate myself on the school board packet provided to me before meetings. I solicit feedback and engage with those affected by the issue and spend time observing and working with people to find a solution. I will continue to utilize these skills when elected to the City Council. I have a background in finance and my daily professional life where I manage a team and collaborate with different departments every day. I'll be ready to work on day one. Fourth question, how do you describe your politics? Answer, I am an independent thinker and a coalition builder. I have demonstrated for the last 4 years while serving on the Board of Education that we must put aside party politics to serve the community. I have worked with Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and Libertarians, which has allowed me to see issues from different viewpoints. I possess the quality to put aside party politics to make the best decision for our community. Final question, why should voters select you? Answer, I have been on the Board of Education for 4 years. This position gave me knowledge in how a board meeting runs, the time you need for preparation, and the amount of commitment needed to attend board meetings, study sessions, and community events. I have had to make tough decisions and work with limited resources when still providing what I believe is a world-class education for our community's children. Being on the City Council involves the same kind of work, balancing differing interests, having positive vision for our community, and working with others to get this done. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 31st, 2023, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Grace Miller from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. And now we'll return to today's obituaries. First obituary, Lyle Curtis Ronfeldt, born April 8, 1941, died October 24, 2023. Lyle Curtis Ronfeldt, 82, of Persia, Iowa, passed away on October 24, 2023. He was born April 8, 1941, to Gilbert and Ella Ronfeldt in the Neola, Iowa area, where he grew up and graduated from Tri-Center in 1960. Lyle loved farming and farmed with his family his entire life. He also worked at Bill Phillips Sales for 33 years and then as a supervisor for the local Iowa rest areas until he retired and farmed until 2005 when he fully retired so he can relax, watch NASCAR, play pitch, and spend more time with his friends and family. On August 9, 1963, Lyle married his wife, Bonnie Watkins, from Council Bluffs, whom he met at Ewald's Cafe, and they enjoyed a wonderful life together for 60 years. They lived in Council Bluffs, Iowa, for 13 years. Then they moved to Persia, Iowa, where he continued to live for the remainder of his life. He is survived by his wife, Bonnie, daughter, Kathy Russell, sons, Kevin, and wife, Brenda Ronfeld, Craig and his wife, Jill Ronfeld, Corey Ronfeld, and grandchildren, Eric Russell, Kyle Russell, Melissa Griffith, Kara Will Worlding, Chance Ronfeld, step-grandchildren, Braxton Heller, Jaden Heller, Jordan Heller, great-grandchildren, Gunnar Griffith, Zane Griffith, sister Judy Hill of Mulberry, Florida, many nephews, nieces, and cousins. Preceded in death by his parents, Gilbert and Ella, brother Kenneth Jean, Dennis, and Lynn, grandson Ryan Ronfeld, in-laws Pearl and Naomi Watkins. It was Lyle's wishes to be cremated. A memorial visitation will be held on November 3, 2023, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Logan Memorial Chapel in Logan, Iowa. Following the visitation, the family would like to invite everyone to the Persia Fire Hall in Persia, Illinois, Iowa, for sandwiches and drinks until 9 p.m. Arrangements made by Logan Memorial Chapter. Second obituary. Robert Winfred II, Rager. Born August 18, 1949. October 7, 2023. Robert Winfred Rager II, 74, age 74, of Glenwood, Iowa, passed away on October 7th, 2023, in Bellevue. He was born August 18th, 1949, in Council Bluffs, Iowa, to Robert Winfred and Ruth Elaine Rager. He graduated from Glenwood High School in 1967 and attended Iowa Western Community College, then on to school for Tool and Die. He faithfully served his country in the United States Army. Robert was employed as a clerk for BNSF for 40 years until his retirement. Some of Robert's interests were drag car racing, bowling, hunting, fishing, and he was a devoted Cubs baseball fan. Preceding Robert in passing were his parents and sister, Gay Elaine, and husband, Harley Winchester. Survivors include his wife, Millie Rager of Glenwood, Iowa, daughter Brenda, and husband Jeff Reef of Glenwood, Iowa, stepdaughters Connie and her husband Eric Yon of Liberty Township, Ohio, Angie and her husband Annie and partner Andy Green of Bennington, Nebraska, Tammy and partner Ryan Ernst of Red Oak, Iowa, sister Ruth Dean and partner Harry Anderson of Albuquerque, New Mexico, grandchildren Austin Reef, Dusty Reef, stepchildren Patrick Joshua and Samantha Green, Jonathan and Nathaniel Ernst, William and Cameron Yon, great-grandchildren Blair Lane, Letty Reef, Perry Ann Reef, aunts, uncles, nieces and nephews, cousins, and many friends. Celebration of Life Gathering, Saturday, November 4th, 2023, 1 to 3 p.m., AgriVision Equipment Group, 58668-190-190th Street, Pacific Junction, Iowa, private and interment, Glenwood Cemetery, Glenwood, Iowa. Memorial donations may be directed to the charity of your choice. Final obituary. Gloria Mae Wellendorf, born August 17, 1937, died October 27, 2023. Gloria Mae Wellendorf, age 86, passed away peacefully at Azria Longview Nursing Home on October 27, 2023. She was born August 17, 1937, to the late Henry and Helen Arndorfer. In Sioux City, Iowa, Gloria worked several years in banking and also as a clerical employee and retired from Lewis Central Schools. In addition to her parents, she was preceded in death by her husband, Howard Wellendorf. Sister Sherry Leverance, Gloria. Gloria is survived by her children, Shelley and partner Mark Holsing, Michael and partner Cassie Wellendorf, John partner Holly Wellendorf, David, partner, Gina Wellendorf, and Sarah Bailey. Brother, Richard, and partner, D. Arndorfer. Several grandchildren and great-granny children, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visitation will be held from 11 to 11:30 a.m. at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Friday, November 3, 2023. Funeral service will be held at 11:30 a.m. at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Friday, November 3, 2023. Interment will be later that afternoon in the Morgan Cemetery near Schleswig, Iowa. Memorials are suggested to Generations Hospice Care in Missouri Valley, Iowa. Now for some sports. State cross country, history for Lewis Central in state meet. Ethan Eichhorn, runner-up as Titans earn podium spot for first time in 50 years. By Peter Burnett. Fort Dodge, Iowa, Lewis Central boys placed third at the Class 3A State Cross Country Championship meet on Saturday, led by defending state champion Ethan Eichhorn, and second. Glenwood's Grace Berglund placed eighth for the fifth place Rams. Boys 3A. Ethan Eichhorn crossed the finish line in 15:25.57 seconds behind Pella's Cannon Dunham. The reigning Class 3A state champion was just 0.2 of a second behind Washington's Micah Rees through 1 mile and took a lead by 0.1 of a second through 2 miles, but a final split of 5:27.8 put Dunham into the lead and earned the sophomore a state championship. Quote, Ethan finishes out a phenomenal career today with a runner-up finish, end quote. Titans head coach Taylor May said, quote, he has been instrumental in our team's success and has been such a great leader for our program these last 4 years. Eichhorn's career includes 17 individual titles, 3 Hawkeye 10 conference, and two district titles, 4 times qualified for state, with 1 state championship and 1 runner-up finish. Glenwood's Andrew Smith medaled in 5th with 15:51.2, and Bryant Keller 10th, 16:05. And LC's Kevin Coots 17th, 16:22. Cade Dierks just missed the medalist stand in 21st, 16:33.5. The Titans earned third place, topping the podium for the first time for Lewis Central in 50 years, behind state championship Gilbert 57 and Pella 63, and second Glenwood was 10th. And every, quote, every cross-country runner in the state of Iowa dreams of making it up on the deck in Fort Dodge, May said. These boys set a goal at the beginning of the year, worked their tails off, and made it a reality today. Words can't describe my joy for these boys that they are bringing home a state trophy, proud of everything that they have given to this team and to the LC community. Continuing with sports, next article. Hungry for more. Eagles conquer Vikings to advance to fourth straight quarterfinal, by Austin Heinen. In a district rematch of the number 1 and number 3 team, Class 1A, number 2, Underwood left no doubt as they shut out AHSTW 42-0 on Friday night at Eagles Stadium in Underwood. For the second time this season, the Eagles didn't need a single passing touchdown, as 6 combined rushing touchdowns from seniors Graham Jensen and Maddox Nelson powered Underwood past the Vikings for a second time this season. We preach to our guys about winning football games in a variety of ways, Eagles coach Nate Michelson said. Quote, for tonight, it's about keeping it on the ground in cold weather, or sometimes it's let Garrett put it in the air and have our receivers make plays we like, having that option too. The ground game was working and kept and those two guys ran the ball hard, and the line has been playing really well over the past few weeks, and it created a formula for success tonight, end quote. Out of Underwood's 393 total rush yards, Nelson ran for 254 yards on 21 carries, and Jensen ran for 99 yards on 14 carries. Underwood needed just 3 plays on their first, as Maddox Nelson took 3 carries on the drive and ran in the first score from 5 yards out. It wasn't until late in the second quarter when Nelson found the end zone a second time from 58 yards out with 5 minutes and 11 seconds left until the break. The Eagle defense forced a 3-and-out and then capped another drive with a rushing touchdown. This time it was Graham Jensen running it in for the score on a 1-yard power run. The Eagles then doubled their score. After the third quarter, Nelson found the end zone a third time on their first drive. For the second half, and Jensen scored on the following 2 drives to help the Eagles pull away with a 42-0 win. Quote, "Our really offensive line dominated as the game went on," Jensen said. "We couldn't run like this without our offensive line doing what they do. They made the holes and made our jobs really easy to where we just had to run right down the middle," end quote. Quote, "We're both super proud of our offensive line," Nelson said. "We've dealt with some injuries and have some guys moving around, but they're peaking at the right time, and they've made it really easy for us tonight," end quote. The Vikings now end the year 6-4 on the year. The Eagles held the Vikings to just 76 yards of total offense, including just 36 yards rushing after allowing 191 yards rushing and 377 yards of total offense in their previous meeting on September 15th. Quote, "Obviously, Underwood is a great team," Viking coach Gigi Harris said. "You've got to give that team and the coaching staff a lot of credit. They played at a really high level tonight, but their effort was also incredibly high, and it was like blood in the water for Sharks. The better they executed, the more confident they got and more physical they played," end quote. The Eagles' defense also forced 3 turnovers to hinder the Vikings' offense. The Vikings will graduate 8 seniors who meant a lot to this program, but will still return a strong core next season. That has Harris and the Vikings eager to keep working. Quote, "I told the seniors and the team that the last game of the season does not define you or the whole season," Harris said. "It may feel like it does right now, but we showed a lot of growth and gained a lot of experience, especially over the last 5 weeks of the season. We grew as a team, and thankfully a lot of those guys are coming back next year. Still, the leadership from our seniors as well as the maturity has been huge as we figured out who were this year, and too bad we didn't get to keep playing with them, end quote. The win clinches the 4th consecutive appearance for Underwood in the state quarter finale. "It's an accomplishment," Michelson said. "And it's an accomplishment, Michelson and the Eagles don't take lightly." Quote, "As I told the guys, this isn't something we should take for granted," Michelson said. "This is not easy to do, and this senior class has been a part of 4 trips to the quarterfinal, and that's quite an accomplishment. I had to tell them I was proud of them and told them I don't take it for granted. We've had some years where we weren't even close to this point. These seniors have been a group, along with some groups before them, that have really taken this program to the next level, and I want to see these guys continue to play, and each week is a challenge we look forward to," end quote. The Eagles will face the OABCIG Falcons, who defeated Trainer 35-14 in their second round contest. Kickoff will be at 7 p.m. in Idaho Grove. Final article. Connecting Adoptable Pets with Loving Homes During National Adoption Week by Mariah Garcia. Every year, 6.2 million pets enter shelters, and today many across the nation are overflowing. Midlands Humane Society is proud to partner with PetSmart Charities to bring adoptable pets to the Council Bluffs PetSmart in support of PetSmart Charities National Adoption Week, taking place November 6th to November 12th. While puppies enjoy a 60% adoption rate, older dog rates lag behind at just 25%. PetSmart Charities National Adoption Week in November coincides with National Adopt a Senior Pet Month. Older pets are often overlooked because of potential future health risks and concerns about ingrained behaviors. But just like behavior, pets age differently. Aside from doing something wonderful for older pets in need, there are so many reasons why they make ideal companions. Bonding with senior pets can be a bit easier because they're more likely to be calm and more experienced and house-trained. For those in search of a fellow couch potato to watch movies with, or even to lay low while working, senior pets can be a perfect match. Whether it's their preferences or their personalities, pets in their golden years may be more transparent. Living with senior pets can inspire their people to slow down and take time to stop and smell the roses. Adopting senior pets ensures peace and better health in their final years and helps shelter to ease the overcrowding. During the in-store event, Midlands Humane Society invites potential pet parents to meet adoptable pets in their area. Opportunities will be given to spend time with pets in spacious meet-and-greet areas. Staff and volunteers will help potential adopters learn about caring for pets and point to welcome resources. Aren't sure if you're ready to adopt? Please consider fostering. This not only gets them out into loving homes, but helps alleviate overcrowding at shelters, and can be an ideal opportunity to really get to know the animals. Information for fostering can be found on the MHS website at MidlandsHumaneSociety.org. Quote, "This special week is a call to action and an opportunity to bring new love into your home," said Heidi Marston, Director of Pet Placement at PetSmart Charities. Shelters across the nation are overflowing, and we're encouraging folks to consider the unique joys of older pets who bring a special kind of low-key, loyal comfort to their people. Some of my deepest bonds have been pets who came into my life when they were in their golden years. It really is a gift. We're thankful for Midlands Humane Society partnership and helping make perfect matches. Adoptable pets will be available at 815 McDermott Street in Council Bluffs. Keep an eye on the Midlands Humane Society Facebook page and website for more information on when dates and times that staff will be at PetSmart for National Adoption Week, November 6th through November 12th. You can view all the information, all the available pets online by visiting MidlandsHumaneSociety.org/adopt. Stop at by MHS at 1020 Railroad Avenue weekdays from 12 to 6 and Saturdays from 11 to 5 p.m. Some pets of the week. Gypsy is a 10-year-old spayed female German Shepherd mix who came to MHS with another dog, Mayhem. She is a laid-back girl who enjoys going on her daily strolls but doesn't need a lot of physical activity to keep her happy. We think she will like spending her afternoons in her new home, taking nice cozy naps in the sun. Aww. The photo of Gypsy is her outside. She looks to be a mid-sized brown dog. I cannot tell what breed that is, but she's wearing a red collar, and she looks really sweet. Madeline is a 7-year-old spayed female domestic long-haired who came to MHS as a stray. She is a very friendly, quiet girl who you'll find napping away the day most of the time. You'll walk by her kennel. She turns into a big purr machine the second you start giving her head scratches. And the photo of Madeline provided is her laying down, and she's a white cat with black spots on her face and paw and on her back. She's got green eyes. And then we have Lady Meow Meow is an 11-year-old spayed female domestic longhair who also came to MHS as a stray, presented with extremely matted fur on her back. She is a nice trim and instantly felt so much better. She is a quiet girl who would like to lazily lay around her new home. The photo of Lady Meow Meow, she is a white cat who looks very, very kind. She has like a heart-shaped nose with gray around her hair and her eyes, and a little bit on her back near her tail. The last pet, Mister, is an 11-year-old neutered male Maltese who was found on a county road in a box. His finders took him to the groomer, and he was severely matted before bringing him to MHS. He has a dental to fix his dental decay. His adopters will need to keep up on his dental needs with a veterinarian moving forward. He is a happy boy who just wants someone to love in his golden years. Mister looks like a very small dog, and the photo provided, he's got very big brown eyes with a lot of white fur. His eyes are a little pink and around his mouth's a little pink. That's probably just normal dog sweat. But he looks very, very nice. Visit MHS weekdays from noon to 6 p.m. and Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can view our available pets online by visiting the website MidlandsHumaneSociety.org/adopt. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 31st, 2023. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. I'm Grace Miller from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, one in four people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home. So take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.